Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Turned Out of Punk Footnotes. I am one of your hosts, Damien Abraham, and your other host, as always, is my friend and my long-suffering host-in-arms, Chris O'Toole. How you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing good. I'm sorry I had to put up with the technological issues we had before the show, but now we're ready to rip.
Hey, man, it's no issue at all.
We're ready. Wait, one second. Let me just check this, Chris.
Yeah.
Okay, torch is ready. Okay, we're ready to rip, Chris.
It straight up sounds like you have a flamethrower.
It's kind of a flamethrower. It's a small flamethrower. Like, once in a while, it kind of hits you like, man, it's a room full of stoners operating blowtorches when you're in a vapor lounge.
I just mean, though, like, you know, it's probably got like whatever, like a butane, whatever type vibe.
Yep.
Like, it's like it fully, the mental picture I have is like you have a device which is like, it's hard to handle with one hand. Like, you have to use two hands, and it, like, the flame is at least 3 feet long. That's what I'm envisioning.
Chris, I'm going to say you're not that far off. This thing takes a half a can of Tane when you fill it. And the flame is like a good 2 feet at you know, when you stop feeling the heat.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm telling you, buddy. This is, you know, I'm not no fucking, you know, pinner smoking, you know, dirt weed dude. You know, I'm coming in with the fire.
Hey, I would never accuse you of such things.
I'm like the Johann Kugelberg of weed.
Yeah. That's always my criticism to other people of Damien. I'm like, Damien tosses this weed game, but it's just all pinners and, you know.
Yeah, he's faking it. He's a poser, you know. He doesn't actually smoke weed. He's
just doing it. I'll tell you that everyone believes you. I'll tell you that right now, Dame.
Well, no, let me tell you, Chris. I'm telling you because of the world that I also have my big toe dangling in. Cannabis posers is a real thing. Like, people faking that they smoke weed and pretending that they smoke weed because there's, you know, money to be made in this industry now. But that's a real thing. It's very weird.
I could see that, and I agree it's weird.
So what I'm telling you, Chris, is that you should just pretend to break edge.
No.
And then that'd just, like, work an angle. Would that be, like, the worst sellout ever? Like, if, like, someone fake broke edge just to sell weed? Or would that be the most edge thing ever?
I have no idea. I'm amused by this concept, but I don't
bring it up before the Edge Tribunal at the next meeting, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm telling
it's yearly on October 17th every year we talk about it.
Well, I'm just giving you quagmires, you know. I'm just giving you quagmires and things to think about, you know. These are just mind puzzles.
Well, hey, we have legal weed to discuss in Canada now.
As we do.
All of my other friends of sobriety have cleverly wrote me or commented to me in person about how, because it's not illegal, therefore it qualifies, and I laugh every time.
But yeah. real laugh, I bet, too.
Yeah.
I think though, you know, if you're smoking that legal weed, you know, you really gotta check that stuff, because there's mold on it, Chris, sometimes.
I suppose, but I just feel like, I mean, maybe this is the wrong attitude, but as someone who really doesn't care about weed or this whole topic all that much, but, like, I feel like the people that smoke the legal weed are like the equivalent of like a narc in some way in my mind. Like, I just feel like it just seems really square. So it's almost like you get even like a weirder smirk from like an asshole straight edge person than you would like just being a regular partaker, if you will.
It's like buying a record store day version of a record.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great analogy. Yeah, you bought, like, you know, you bought the sick reissue, the sick unnecessary reissue. You got it.
The limited to 200 on Banana Swirl.
Yeah.
But they're gonna do, like, you know, Swirl Banana too.
Yeah.
But no, I think with cannabis stuff right now, it's definitely interesting, but I don't want to force you to talk about this anymore, Chris, because that's what Oil and Flowers is for. You know, Boone and I both enjoy talking about this nerdy shit over there.
Yeah.
Buddha hates when I start bringing up Kill by Death references on that podcast.
Yeah, or football-related in news and info, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's if I bring up football-related news and info, it's just trolling you. Now, I do love football, soccer, you know, because I feel it gives me ample opportunity to troll the people I love.
Yes, I agree with you there, and you have some good people you control pretty hard on that.
I've got a lot of people I control, even inadvertently trolling people, as I found it on the last tour. Yeah, with this football shenanigans. I just got off tour. We haven't talked for a while, Chris. Have you been, buddy?
Same old, buddy. Nothing changes.
Go to any shows? See anything cool?
Trying to think. Probably.
We didn't talk about Danny's solo show, I don't think.
No, I did see it. I had to work a couple. I feel like in their absence I saw an Ancient Shade, so it must have just been Danny. Regardless though, Ancient
At Lee's.
Yeah. It was good. Danny solo at Lee's, and that was not Ancient Shapes, although Ancient Shapes did play there. For the listeners, we have a friend, mutual friend, Dan Romano, a highly talented prodigy, dare I say Jonah-esque, and he makes music, whatever, but he has another group called Ancient Shapes, which is kind of the more pertinent to this program, and he plays as both things, both configurations, different bands. I feel like there was a punk show I went to, but I'm trying to remember what. It's going to bother me. I don't know. I'm at a loss. But anyway.
Did you go to that a Forward show in the end?
I did not end up going, no. Did you?
No, I went to see. Actually, I saw Tropical Red that night.
Yeah. We're bad punks. Sick. Bad punks.
Yeah, well, you know, I definitely feel I've seen Forward. I've seen Forward quite a few times, but definitely less than Tribe Called Red. But I can bring the whole family to Tribe Called Red. It really wouldn't have been the whole family kind of show, I think, with Forward.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is no excuse. I should have gone, as I said, bad punk. But I've seen Forward a couple times, so I don't feel I've entirely missed out, to be fair.
How spoiled are we in 2018 that we miss a Burning Spirit band playing in such close proximity to us? Granted, in far closer proximity to me, but still, close proximity to us.
Yeah, true.
We are, as you say, bad punks.
Yes, we are bad punks. But anyway, I heard it was great. And, you know, of course, that whole thing. More importantly, I guess, I'm assuming you didn't fly to Japan again, like literally everybody I seem to know that just flew to Japan this weekend.
Nope. I'm here.
Catch the most infamous group in of all time in punk, arguably. But yeah.
I think that is, I will say though, that is still the greatest show I think I've ever been to in my life.
I'm sure it is. I'm just amazed how many people now I know have seen them.
It's amazing. Like there's like few bands. Sorry, I'm hitting a dab. If you're hearing that weird wheezing noise in the background, that's the whistling of this dab.
Yeah.
Very low temp though. I'm doing a rosin dab, Chris, so it tastes delicious.
Yeah.
But anyway, I digress. I think going to see them is like, that's like the event, right? Like they've got to be like the only band that kind of has that draw at this point. Maybe there's bands in North America that do that. I'm just not thinking of. But that like play like once or twice a year and people travel over to see them and line up to see them. It's like, there's no other way to put it. It's like a pilgrimage.
Yeah, it very much is. I'm always amazed at the people I know that are able to, and I'm envious of these people that have been able to catch them. We're talking about Gauze or Gauze. I don't know how it's pronounced, but I'm going to say Gauze as a North American.
Yeah.
For listeners who don't know what the hell we're talking about. So yeah, they just played this weekend, and we had some mutual pals that were over there amongst a lot of other people, seemingly. And you were fortunate enough to see them like about a year or so ago when you were over, correct?
Yes, I was, Chris.
Yeah.
Yes, I was.
And it was still
religious.
Yeah.
If you had told me when I was a kid that I'd be standing beside a member of the Courage Crew watching Gauze in Japan, I was like, there's no way that's ever going to happen. But it did.
True.
And you can listen to anyway, a podcast
I don't know how we got on this. We were talking about, you were mentioning something. Oh, shows. Yeah, I don't think I went into anything that I can remember.
We were talking about Burning Spirit bands playing close proximity
Burning
to
Spirits
us.
Bands, yeah, we missed that show. We both missed that show because we're bad punks. But you were talking about, so tour, what you had some record scores or what have you?
Yeah, I went to a couple shops. Like, I would have liked to have gone to more. Unfortunately, you know, I was splitting my time between, you know, cannabis stuff and podcast stuff. And Chris, I'm going to give everyone a bit of a hot tip because it's not coming up for a couple weeks. The Danger Aaron episode of this podcast, top five. Top five.
Okay. High praise.
It's unbelievable. It's coming up in a couple weeks, but I recorded that. Anyway, I did go to some record stores, though, along the way. Picked up some good stuff. Got gifted some ridiculous stuff. Yeah, it was a great tour. It's a great tour. Shout out to Riot Style Records. Got some Wicked Riot, you know, the Dwarf 7-inches they put out. Surfboard Split. Have you heard that band Surfboard yet, Chris?
No,
they're pretty sick. They're kind of
I'm looking this up now. Which Dwarves records are you talking about? New records or old records?
New ones. Well, last few years, Riot Style Records, the label, has been doing stuff with the Dwarves for, God, I guess like not 10 years, but getting close there now.
Oh, I thought you were saying Ride Style. You're saying
no Riot Style. Sorry.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
Had a dab in my throat.
That's all right. Yeah, so we only came to get high single. Okay, gotcha.
But yeah, they're a great label and super stoked to get these records. Picked up some Jail Cell Recipe records from my homie, English Robbie. Seeing him out there in SF. He's going to be a future guest on the show. Met future guest Dan Panic. Tony Molina, got to go and see that guy again. Yeah, it was a wicked time right up the coast.
That's crazy, man. Envious. I was just there, but I want to be there again.
Yeah, like we didn't get to see it, but you know, like you did. But I tried to convince them to take the Pacific Coast Highway, and no one wanted to.
I was trying to convince your band to do. I'm not going to give it away because I feel like maybe it could happen one day. But I was all over Jonah to do something, which hopefully will happen one day with your group. But it didn't happen, so I was mildly disappointed. But
yeah, I'm mildly intrigued now, Chris. What are you talking about?
It's something I want to shout out. We'll talk. This is, yeah. Listeners, sorry.
We'll talk after.
It's nothing scandalous. It's just it was a neat idea, and I also don't want anyone to take it. So that's the other reason why I'm trying to keep it under wraps. But anyway, go on.
But no, it was fun the whole way up. Had a great time. Thank you to everyone that came out and said nice things about the podcast. A lot of people came up and talked to me about the podcast, Chris. And thank you to everyone that, you know, came out and just, you know, checked out the show and didn't say hi, too.
Yeah.
And not everyone says hi. I gave everyone the chance to say hi, but not everyone chooses to. A lot of people leave like, nah, I don't want to approach that. I like it at a safe distance.
Nice.
But anyway, I guess we should move on to some much sadder and unfortunate news that's recently kind of befallen the punk world, like a legit tragedy. Not that the passings of anyone isn't a tragedy, but, you know, certainly someone that left a huge hole in their passing. And that is the passing of Pete Shelley from the band The Buzzcocks.
Yeah, that happened over, I honestly cannot remember now. I believe it was a week ago, thereabouts.
Yeah, I think it was about a week ago.
From when we're recording this, so from when it comes out, I'm not sure. But yeah, so that was I thought that was a big one. I mean, like, you know, obviously we try to acknowledge everybody that we can when this happens, and it seems to have been happening a lot lately, unfortunately. This year, I think, was a pretty daunting year for losing you know, sort of big personalities in this broader community, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just thought it was one I didn't expect either. Not that it, you know, what do you expect when it's sort of something that happens, but I just thought like there was a, you know, a large understandable outpouring, and it was nice. I'm happy anybody that gets like a, sort of a reception to that level that I've seen both from like music industry and then also like from the common person that just seems to have related to the Buzzcocks music, which is understandable because it's fantastic. And of course, he went on to do other music as well, Pete. But I think most notably into this show, of course, Buzzcocks related. But yeah, I don't know. I just it's sad, and I just wanted to us to acknowledge that. I think it was you know, unfortunate.
Yeah, like they're really the band that invented DIY. You know, like they're the band, you know, that invented pop punk. They're the band that just such a significant band, and he was such a significant personality. Like I got to meet him a couple times, and a really, really nice guy, like a really, really sweet human being, and humored all my nerdy punishing questions. But yeah, definitely a huge hole left by it. So rest in peace, Pete Shelley, and thank you for everything.
Yeah, agreed. Same.
I guess we will now move on to the awkward part of the show where we transition into somewhat, I guess, you know, happier topics, which is, you know, nerding out about music.
Yes. So where are we going?
Well, we got two episodes, Chris, this week. We got two huge ones to talk about. We have the Mark McCoy episode and the Barry Hensler one. So where do you want to go first?
Well, I think we should just probably do chronologically. So I'm going to say something from the Mark McCoy to begin. I'm a week away from it, so I'm just trying to recall my great talking points.
Yeah, this is a fun one, man. I knew you'd love it too because, like myself, you're a Charles Bronson fan and fan of everything he's done since then. So, yeah, this was a great one to kind of sit down and talk to, you know, him about. Like, this is someone who really, really changed the game.
Yeah, I think so. I think there was, we may have discussed this on a previous one, like, briefly, but I think there are some sort of, like, you know, the only easy way to kind of state it, it sounds kind of, like, gross, but there are, like, these tastemaker personalities, and I certainly believe that he was and or is one still presently. But certainly that sort of Youth Attack, you know, entity that exists was such a large looming presence for something I didn't know a great deal about early on. But it was definitely a thing.
Yeah, like he just, like, you know, bleeds cool. You know, like that's the, growing up, like they were the coolest. And they were, and you know, and still he's like fucking cool as shit. Like the stuff he puts out still cool and he like, you know, but that was the thing when I was a kid. It was just like, you know, that was the first band where I was like, oh, man, is this stuff I like cool? Like, you know, I thought all the stuff I like was cool and punk. But like, oh, shit, there's like coolness within punk, too. Like, there's stuff that's considered not cool within the punk world.
Yes.
I think which I kind of guess I knew it before, but like. You know, I can't be your friend anymore, or I can't be in a band with you because you like a band on Epitaph. Cut right to the soul of my being.
It didn't cut to the soul of my being. I think I remember seeing that song title and being amused, but like, and of course, like, certainly there was aspects of that, well, and even he talks about him liking, I can't remember which one, I think it was NoFX. He said he was in too briefly.
Yeah, that's why I had to ask him. Yeah. Like, he had to have a NoFX period.
Well, I think like within reason, depending on your age, you're going to have liked, you know, some semblance of that as far as like your trajectory. You know what I mean? If you're within a certain age bracket, I think it's very hard to avoid. This isn't to say you should avoid it either. I think there is good Epitaph stuff for sure. I think there are certain things that of course have aged, and as you've so affectionately coined the Epifat, you know, zeitgeist or whatever is a thing. But, you know, I have no beef with a lot of the stuff from that era that they put out. And I do think as well, I think point taken, like I think that Charles Bronson song was very, very, very well stated. It is a great torpedo moment. And they actually had a bunch. That group, I think, was really good at that.
Yeah. Yeah. They were definitely like masters of takedowns.
Yes.
Like there's a meme, like they were like the OLC that was, it was okay to like.
Yeah, which is funny because they even have, of course, a very infamous diss on that too.
Yes.
But it's, yeah, it is very weird because it's cynical in all the right ways with still being humorous enough, but also not, I don't know what the word would be. Yeah, you didn't get, like, there was not, like, a machismo to it. So I don't know if that's maybe why it resonated with me more at that age. I don't know what it was, but, yeah, I just thought they were a really clever band. It's funny now, some of the stuff, like, when he's talking about the song titles, like, I always knew they had kind of crazy song titles from what I remembered as someone who doesn't, like, look at the records every day, but, and looking at them again, like, some of those song titles are kind of, like, they do seem a little, like... Like, and some of them are clever, but it's just like, you know, they have a song called Chicago and like
yeah,
it's just, you know, an eavesdrop and it's just like weird. But then like, you know, Sick of OJ is a great song title, especially for like that era, like that 90, whatever year that, I guess the record came out in 95. I don't know when they did the actual song originally, but you know, like that's a great, I don't know. It's a great title for that era, because OJ was everywhere, and like the like writing a song with that I think is brilliant. But anyway, yeah, I just think their legacy has lived on, and what surprised me most about the interview relating to Charles Bronson specifically was that I had never realized that they didn't really tour at all. I think that's kind of wild considering their reputation presently.
Yeah, like it's amazing how far that band traveled.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's because like you were saying, they were also like, they knew about punk, you know, and they knew about hardcore in like a really nerdy way. And like the stuff they were referencing was like, I don't know, was kind of like stuff that required a little bit more of a deeper knowledge of punk and hardcore, like very much like doing what Spaz was doing, but this was almost like, you know, the slightly more cynical version of Spaz, if that was such possible.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah. I think Spaz is almost has more of like a, and it's not the appropriate way to state it, but it's more of like a pop culture references. Whereas like they have that, but theirs are more like, I don't know, man, like, I don't know. Just the fact I'm looking at the 7-inch now, like the demo or whatever, and like the fact that they cover the Neos on that, which I couldn't remember they had. Like that's insane for that year.
Dude, there's so much stuff about this 7. Okay, let's just dive in. Let me make this the first talking point. This demo tape, 7-inch, which you know, Mark claims to have no idea where it came from, but like, yo, there's just so many things about this record that are ridiculous. Okay, So on the back, it's got they had beef with the band Race Trader.
Yes, and I recall this.
So I don't know whoever did this 7-inch. I have no idea who did, but if you look at the address on the back, it's the dude from Race Trader's address,
which is a troll of the time. I would
total say. Troll of the time, you know. Yeah. So this dude, and I heard from like a mutual friend that. It was his folks' house, and they would get mail from Japan asking if there's any copies of this 7-inch available still.
Which is totally brilliant in a way. But yeah, certainly mean-spirited.
Yeah, very mean-spirited. Like, not saying it's, you know, I'm not saying I'm bagging, but I'm just saying, like, there's just so many cerebral, weird, like, in references, and like, look at this lyric sheet, how impenetrable, like, you know, it is written, but it's also like vaguely kind of references like UK stuff. Like it's almost like the drawings reference the Stupids in a weird way.
Yeah.
To me, I don't know. And then it's got like the old flyers in there too.
Let alone the record label name is pretty next level as well.
The record label's sick. It looks so cool. This record's ridiculous.
Yeah. So I just think they were... I don't know. They were hitting all the right marks for me. I think that there's a reason why this band resonates. But back to the interview, I was shocked that his kind of like whatever, like they didn't tour, like they played the West Coast, and like, you know, the one thing I related to was and perhaps you relate to is the They're just like, yeah, we played, we made no money ever. And like, yep, I'm like, that sounds like an experience that I'm familiar with. But yeah, it's just, I don't know. He gave it enough credence because obviously it's something he's known for, but it also seemed like a very, very short moment of time.
Yeah.
That he seems to have to kind of explain that he kind of seemed to talk about was of a specific era and time only almost, which I think that's a good way to be. I think there's a lot of people that can milk that and sort of keep trudging up the fact that they were in it or what have you. And I don't feel like, to me anyway, that I've experienced or read or seen anywhere, none of those members really seem to like go off and like milk that, which I like.
Yeah, they all kind of like, you know, almost distance themselves from it in a weird way.
Yeah, and maybe for a minute, and again in the interview he explains like they just like pissed off a ton of people.
Yeah.
So perhaps there was a time when there was necessity to separate from that association. I don't know, but I don't know. So one thing I wanted to bring up, because when I listened to the interview on that talking point, as far as pissing people off and like, you know, clearly some of the songs are like pointedly, you know, targeted. Is that solely the impetus, like relating to the group you're a part of, Fucked Up, of course, was that where the early Fucked Up, you know, edge came from, that cinema? Like, because you were the only other group that I knew of that kind of did it in that sort of way.
I think, like, for us, it was more by way of Chris Callahan, you know, which probably was influenced by Charles Bronson in a way. But he was even doing that stuff before that, like Left 4 Dead era. He was already kind of into that. But I think the band, like, there would be no way this band existed as Career Suicide without Charles Bronson. Like, that first Board of Education demo, like the band that legitimately becomes Career Suicide more than even the first lineup of Career Suicide is Career Suicide at this point. Like that Jonah Martin dynamic is like that demo is just like a super inept, like beyond inept version of Charles Bronson.
I get I'd never thought about it in that light. Yeah, I believe you mentioned that in the interview too.
Oh no, Martin was obsessed with Charles Bronson.
Yeah,
I think he had a patch on his jacket, or Jonah did, or one of them definitely did.
Well, I mean, and it does make sense, like, stylistically, I get it. You know, if I'm thinking about those individuals, it would make perfect sense.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great, you know, if it in fact was that big an influence, then I think that's great too, because it makes, I don't know, it makes sense. That's another, I mean, Crew Suicide, a great, great band, actually. I think,
Weirdly enough, Board of Education was not, though. But Career Suicide is definitely a great band. I can definitely...
I'm not throwing no shade at Board of Education. I'm not sure. But
I got to play you this tape next time you're over, Chris. I can't even read this stuff on the air. I was like, I should read this. Like, nope.
I'm just so bummed. I tried to buy it, and I got friggin'... Yeah. I tried to buy it from your band member, and I got... Someone sniped me.
Yeah, his name's Damian Abraham. He's on the other end of this phone call.
You got it? Really?
Yeah, I got... That's where I got it from, Sandy. I got... A bunch of weird Career Suicide stuff off Sandy.
I thought someone else had scored it, not you. But that's okay, then I'm going to feel all right. I feel better about it.
I think I only had it as a CDR back in the day. Yeah. It came out as a CDR, and they had a razor blade in the CDR.
It's just so good. Jonah talks about it on his episode.
Yeah, it's fucking amazing. Jonah episode is worth going back and listening to just for that.
Yeah.
They were definitely the big influence on Career, or the like Board of Education before Career Suicide, back then. But yeah, like I love that band. Like I remember when that LP came out, all the guys from Godzilla were all lined up outside of Full Blast to get it from Simon Harvey, who had ordered it in, and we all lined up and got it like the day it came out. There was like hype around it coming out.
Yeah, you were mentioning like I wasn't in the city, and I came to this band a little later. So I never had like I was never on the wave when the record dropped. But I think you know what it is with this group too, relating to sort of that lasting influence or whatever, I think weirdly enough, and you bring it up, and I do think it is one of the better, like, whatever, collection CDs that exists. That CD seemed to get pretty far and wide, and I think it was done in such a way that it captured everything really well.
Yeah.
And so yeah. I feel like that might have even been an even bigger reason why.
Oh, definitely. I remember the CD came out. It was, like, sold out for weeks. It was also in the early days of, like, eBay, where people were buying that CD and then turning around and flipping it on eBay for, like, $200 or $100 or something.
Wow. But, yeah, I still have a copy of it, and the video stuff on it is pretty...
Oh.
Pretty unbelievable. So good. Which, speaking of, like, I guess that'll be the next talking point. But I was kind of shocked and sort of amazed, because when I watched that video stuff the first time, and they're like whipping the record up or whatever and shooting it again, I haven't watched it in like a long time, so I think that's what happens.
Yeah, they put down. He shoots it. I remember in the junkyard with a shotgun.
I definitely know there's guns, and I definitely remember they shot something. I can't remember if it's the record, but I guess it is. But anyway, I remember thinking, like, watching that and thinking, like, man, like, after everything else about the group, seeing that and being like, these guys are badass, man. They're like shooting shotguns. And, like, and so the interview for me is kind of funny because it shattered some illusions I had. I just thought, like, these guys are like, you know, like badass. And just, and then, like, he's like, no, we had to, he's like, he hurt his wrist or his shoulder or whatever, shot the gun, and like he never shot, well, I don't know if he never said he never shot a gun, but basically he was not a gun guy. That was like it was intentionally done to for the video or whatever. So I was amused at that too, but I still thought it came off really, really great at the time.
Oh yeah, no, that was amazing when it came out. Like, I just remember seeing it being like, this is the coolest.
It reminded me, and because he talks about skateboarding sort of in the early whatchamacallit, like his trajectory, he's talking about skateboarding being an influence early on, and him calling people whatever, which we can talk about that too. But the gun thing reminded me of this. There was like a brief, I don't know what you want to call it, like campaign or whatever, but there was a skate company called Plan B.
Yeah.
And there's a very, very big skater now, but he skated for them. He was big then too, but he's like become like a household name kind of guy. But Danny Way had this, I think it was the Danny Way board, where he had like a mannequin board, and it was like the whole, like back then, this is like, you're talking about like Thrasher magazine style, but the whole art concept was like they had taken like a shot, like a 12 gauge or some shit, and they were like shooting this mannequin or whatever, and then the board was like the stills from the actual shooting or whatever. So
like glued to the board or just like
No. It was just like the expose.
Okay, yeah.
And they kind of did a thing in the magazine that coincided with it. And that Charles Bronson thing, when they did that, I mean, of course it's not really anything like it, but that reminded me of that. Like back then, I remember thinking like, it probably is not a nod to that at all, but I just remember that was the one thing that, again, just as a youthful memory that just kind of came to me, yeah, that was something that, yeah, it just reminded me of it.
Yeah, no, it definitely is like, you know, like evokes a time where, I don't know, like it just felt like that kind of performance art, like aggression, like, I don't know, just guns felt a little less dangerous for some reason.
I think what it is too is I associate, because even, I think it's the Repos or Ropes, I can't remember what, but I believe it's Repos who did that Live Munitions record, which is also on Youth Attack, which I believe, I know it has all weapons, but I think there's like guns on it as well. Anyway, the layout's incredible. I believe he did the layout. So in my head, there was always these subconscious things about like these crazy weapons and guns. I just thought these guys are like into that. This is like, but I loved it. So it's kind of funny. I think it's just been in the back of my head. So that illusion was a little bit of dismantled for me, but anyway.
Yeah, I can see that. I'm not a gun guy, which is okay. I'm not really a gun guy either. So, but yeah, no, I guess, next point I kind of wanted to go into, unless you have a point.
No.
I want to talk about the first place I heard them, which is the, I heard it on the No More Dick Jokes comp.
Okay.
It came out, I don't know, but that. Have you heard that CD?
No.
It's a compilation of that, of the All That and a Bag of Dicks comp, and okay. the Double Dose of Dicks, double 7-inch comp.
Great titles. Yep.
Yeah. This was, of course, the label Disgruntled Records, which was run by the mentioned in the episode great guy John Ahrens from Charles Bronson. Very cool guy. Also played in 14er Fight later on. But very, very funny guy. And so, yeah, did this label that, you know, doesn't look like they're going for very serious kind of tones with it. With the names of those comps. But that CD compilation has dozens of songs, including I Can't Be Your Friend Anymore Because You Like a Band on an Epitaph, and also Charles Bronson's amazing cover of Last Warning by Agnostic Front. But yeah, you got to check out these comps, Chris.
I have not checked out those comps. I'm curious if you're saying it's someone from 14er Fight who put that out initially?
Yeah, and he's also in Charles Bronson, John Ahrens.
Oh, okay. Because there was, mustn't have been him, but there was someone from 14er Fight who came out, I remember, to see. Yes, play.
In Arizona?
Yeah, yeah.
Played, it was Frank from 14er Fight, the singer.
There we go, yeah.
Who also played in MKUltra.
Yes, okay, so shout out. Very cool. Also a Hawks fan. Big up. But, yeah, I don't know why I brought that up. Humble brag. But I don't know these comps. I'm trying to find them as I'm doing this.
If you go to Charles Bronson and you go to the comps on the resource.
Yeah, that's what I'm in now.
But and singles EPs. And then it's like you can see, for some reason, the double 7-inch doesn't come up when you do that. But if you click on Disgruntled Records, you'll see the comps.
I still don't see Disgruntled. I'm doing all these things that you're saying. But oh, there we go. I found Disgruntled now. Okay. So, actually, I do see the comp now. You're just better at the resource than I am. Okay, yeah, no, fuck, I don't have this. All right, I haven't even seen this. 97 it came out?
Yeah.
Of course, there's a ton of bands on it.
There are so many bands. It's all Chicago and Chicago area kind of bands. Well, I guess so Dillinger 4 has a Chicago
connection. This was one of the first things you
heard of? Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I'd never seen this.
Yeah, this is the first place I heard actually so many bands, like so many of those Chicago bands that I love, including the band Jesus, who have the last song on this comp, which title doesn't need to be repeated on the air. You can look it up yourself. But a great, unbelievable band. The lyrics of that song are like, you know, pretty actually powerful and stuff. So it's a band worth checking out.
And so there's that. So you said there's two comps of this? I'm just looking up trying to find.
Yeah, the next one down is the double. They're both comped on that CD, but that Double Dose of Dicks.
Okay, yeah. Double Dose of Dicks, double 7-inch, Disgruntled Records, 98.
Yeah, look at this comp. Yeah. It's actually a pretty sick comp. Like, look at that lineup.
Yeah, it looks pretty decent, too. But yeah, cool. No, I never knew these. This is not. I don't even remember where I first heard this group or what have you. The CD was definitely, whenever that came out, I think I knew of them prior to that. But I remember it was a big deal to get that for me at the time, but I don't know why I would have known their reps so hard already. Maybe I did have one of those records. I have a very foggy recollection of this, but anyway, cool group.
I guess the one you could kind of get was the 6-week 7-inch, like the third 7-inch.
Yeah,
like that the split in the demo, I guess, first, but then like the real first 7-inch was like 6 weeks had it kind of impressed, right?
Yeah, like what I believe to get over to? I definitely didn't have it in 95. I'm just trying to think of where I would have got it, but it did get repressed here, it says, a few times. So most 6 week stuff, though, was accessible because I remember running into it at any variety of places. But yeah, anyway, regardless, sick band, but I don't know that comp. Yeah, that's crazy that you heard of them from that, though. I really don't remember where I heard of them from. It's too bad. I wish I had a vivid recollection.
Yeah, I wish I had more of these records. I've got a pretty good collection, but not all of them, that's for sure.
I always thought it was funny that they just used the name Charles Bronson, and that never seemed to be an issue. At least that was ever reported.
Well, that's not his real name either, right?
I guess, but just like the character, you'd figure that's got to be owned. Like, it just seems like...
But it's like, it's not a character. It's like, that's his, like, that's like his, the actor.
Agreed, but I mean, like, everything about it, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. The actor, like, he didn't raise an issue, although I don't know...
He died in, like, 96, I think, right?
96. Yeah, so maybe he had already passed. But you figure even, I don't know, maybe the estate, but then again, some of these records probably weren't reaching a wide enough, you know, whatever audience by that time.
Yeah, you'd have to be a real narc to, like, call up the estate of Charles Bronson and be like, yo. But he took his name from the Bronson Gate when he was walking by it, I guess, according to legend, when he went to the Paramount Studios for an audition.
Wow.
Which is, yeah, I love fucking Charles Bronson movies.
Yes. Death Wish are the necessary watching.
Yeah. Have you seen the remake?
No.
I can't imagine it's good.
No, God, no. Even if it's good, it just shouldn't have been done.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so I'm trying to think what else we can get to here. The one thing I wanted to mention before I forget, is related / not, is when he's talking about, what was the story where he had decoded the phone number thing and he called? Like, that's insane.
That's the fucking craziest story ever. That's the story I wanted to get to. Yeah, that's crazy, eh? To get to Todd from FYP.
Yeah, actually, okay, so that's a good one. That unraveled nicely. So FYP, I would not have thought that would have been an association. I don't remember thinking of those two bands together, but it's kind of cool because I do see what he says in the interview, and I liked both of those groups, and I liked them at that time. But it's funny, I never put them together.
I got to get Todd on the show, man, because that guy's got to be like, you know, like, what dude can link, like, professional skateboarding, propaganda, Charles Bronson, I guess Fat Mike, really, too, because, like, you know.
Yeah, little-known guy named Fat Mike.
Little guy named Fat Mike, but, like, I mean, you know, I love FYP, too. That band is fucking amazing.
Yes, and I think they were similarly provoking in a bit of a different way, but I get the idea of them being similar, though, in terms of, like, that cynical tone. But I think it was, like, FYP's was more, I don't know, socially conscious or however you want to say that.
I would have never in my fucking life made that they were associated.
No, and that's what blows me away. That's part of the things that you get out of some of these interviews that I think I'm most, amazed by, is that there are, like, even looking at the resource presently, I'm looking at, you know, his sort of releases and then Charles Bronson. And the fact that I'm just looking here now, yeah, they don't have a split or anything.
Like, there's no connection between the two as far as I know.
Yeah. Which is wild, because even when he, the other thing that blew my mind is when he drops the, I think he mentioned Swallowing Shit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, which was who the hell's band was that? Because wasn't that someone from FYP, or was just someone, or was Todd?
No, it's someone from Propagandhi.
Okay.
It's Todd from Propagandhi.
Okay, so that's a wrong Todd, or is the same Todd?
Different Todd.
Okay.
But they did a split with Propagandhi.
Yes.
Before Todd was in the band.
Yeah, it's
when it was still John K. Samson, because it's basically a split with John K. Samson. It's basically a split with the Weaker Thens.
Which record's that, then? Hold on, you're blowing my mind here. So what's the Swallowing Shit split?
There's a Propagandhi FYP split.
Okay, I have that. Like the 10-inch you're talking about?
No, that's the I Spy Propagandhi split.
Oh, I'm confused.
Which does feature a member of Swallowing Shit.
True. Okay, so we're getting...
But have you heard this Thank Heaven for Little Boys Letter of Resignation split 7-inch?
Yeah, I have it. So that's the split. Okay, yeah. So the FYP, I do have that.
Yeah.
And that's the better version of Letter of Resignation as well.
Yeah, it's the best one. And, like, really, that's, like, because I think that might even predate the Painted Thin John K. Samson split. So that's really the first Weaker Thens recording.
Yeah, he did like I think a solo record or whatever that might have predated all that, but like it never really kind of came out. It was like this recording from what I remember of the time. But anyway, yeah, the fact that we're even talking about the Weaker Thens in relation to talking about Mark McCoy kind of
Dude, so
says
nuts.
everything, you
Yeah.
know, which also probably would slightly bum out Mark McCoy.
No,
But
I
anyway.
think he'd be like stoked that, you know, like that we can kind of get there through him.
I
You
don't know
know?
if he would be, but I'm amused
Well, I don't
nonetheless.
know. I think for me, like when he told me that FYP thing, I can't believe I forgot that till you brought it up. Thanks for bringing it up, because it was like, yeah, that's why we do this goddamn thing, Chris. That's why we fight.
Yeah, it was wild, and I guess what I mean to touch on here, speaking of all that, I was more impressed just by that randomness of whatever rearranging the numbers, him calling
Dude,
it
that's
and all
crazy.
that,
That's next level psycho shit.
which it just in and of itself is wild. But while we're on the topic, FYP I think is a group that, I don't know if they're lost to time entirely, but I don't hear people speak about them all that much in the circles that we inhabit.
I think it's because we're in Canada and they never made it here. You know, but like I think like in the States, in certain areas, like you know, certain scenes, they're like,
Yeah.
you know, given their proper, not maybe, you know, they obviously could do with more do, all of us could do with more do, but like they are certainly kind of like talked with like reverence in certain circles, that's for sure. Like, but you're right, like here they never came up here, right? So we never got to see them.
Yeah, that's true. I
And I don't
only
think
know
they
of
may, I
them.
don't know how much they did on the East Coast even.
They have a lot of records too. They have like what, six full lengths? That's
Dude,
crazy.
yeah, like let's. Oh man, like that's this is awesome that we're doing this now because like I've always wanted to do a deep dive on this discography because like, dude, like the record labels that they're on, obviously Recess Records, but also like Theologian,
Yeah, that one
K.
stood out to
They
me
did a
too.
K record.
Wow. What's the, isn't Jason some crazy label too? Isn't that no, I'm off base. I don't know what that is. I thought that was someone's, I don't
Somewhere
know,
living
Ryder's
at.
label, but I might be confusing it with someone. But that is nuts. I did
Yeah.
not know that they did a K record. That's crazy.
Yeah, they're like, you know, I would say for pop punk, we've had this conversation before about like the you know, like the Dillinger Four kind of sphere of pop punk, like the grad school pop punk, like pop punk that it's okay to like. Like
Yeah,
pop punk it's okay to you know, serve when company comes over. But I would say FYP is definitely in that rarefied air of like super intelligent pop punk, like the bands they did splits with, like you know, just shows like you know, they were kind of like you know, they did a split with the Grumpies.
I'm just trying to find something here because I'm looking at that that K record, and the credit here on it says it was recorded in Hermosa Beach. Where were they from?
They're from down there.
Oh, so they are from like that. I
Yeah,
didn't know
because
they were
he's
from California at all.
like you know more about skateboarding than I do, so I'm not that familiar with the skateboarding career, but like I think he's a Southern California skateboarder, but they're definitely like Southern
Okay.
California.
Okay. I don't know. I didn't know where they were from. I always thought they were from like probably Minnesota or something. I had no idea that, okay, so that makes a little more sense now. I think it's because of Propagandhi. I think I just assumed
Yeah.
they must be near, so they must be in, you know, slight, well, as nearby as you can be to Winnipeg, which is not very near to most places. But anyway, this is crazy, yeah. But I certainly would have never, ever associated FYP and Charles Bronson.
Yeah, I would never, I never in my life until he said it, like, you know, and especially the way he found it out and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they are definitely, a cool, that's a cool connection.
Also, so Recess was their own thing,
Yeah,
right?
that's Todd's label.
Yeah. And Recess has actually done a lot of neat stuff too.
Yeah. No, Recess is a badass label. Like, Recess is the reason I had Dwarfs Records.
Yeah, it's true. They even did, cause they, which did they do any original Doors records? I can't remember. I guess they did. It looks like here. Cause I remember the reissues they did. Well, at least the CDs. I don't know if they did vinyl of it. but I remember them doing like the, I think it's Free Cocaine they did, which is like a collection.
Yeah, that's the one I, that was the first one I had. Even though I could, you know, the Sub Pop record was obviously around, but.
And weird, there's a CD version of The Doors Are Young and Good Looking that's on Theologian and Recess.
Yeah, because that was Recess and Theologian were like partner labels. I love the Theologian would be an interesting one to kind of get
into. Yeah, but didn't, what I'm confused about is the same, so is this, because Epitaph did that record too, so I guess they did it
after? They made it before Epitaph did it.
Yeah, I guess. Wow, I didn't know that.
But just before.
So that, yeah, I always thought the association happened posthumously, but I guess, anyway, cool. The more you learn. Yeah, Free Cocaine, that CD in, from 98, which is Essential, and Lick It, there's the other one. That's the 83 to 86, also Essential. Classic Dwarves stuff.
Yeah.
Not, I mean, maybe the best, but I don't know. I like some of the other things that fall later, but definitely really, really essential stuff. Anyway, I don't know where we're going with this. It's just great.
No, it's, I was going to say also like Theologian, Pessimizer, and Recess. You know, like what a cool trio of labels.
Yeah. That's definitely the low-key Damien. I don't know what you'd say.
Yeah.
Is like, Pantheon the right word?
Yeah, that's like, well, I've got all my bases covered right there, right? Like, yeah. I got my like Tagger Metal. I got my like Stoner Core.
Yeah.
I got my Pop Punk. Yeah. And I got my Pennywise. I'm actually sitting here right now, Chris, holding in my hand both my copies of the first Pennywise 7-inch. So weird. I dug those out today to listen to them. So it all comes back to the P-dubs.
Hey. I've never heard anyone call them P-dubs. That's incredible.
Oh, I'm never going to call them that to their face.
Okay, so we've done Recess. I think we've scoured, unless there's anything else you wanted to touch on. We probably should talk about the Barry episode a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. We definitely should talk about the Barry episode because that is a fucking killer one, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, Barry Hensler came on the show. I kind of got into it, but I met him a couple years ago, well, 10 years ago now or something. Went to his place, hung out, and then sort of finally get to, you know, really sit down and talk to him. It's a, you know, a dream come true. Necros, I kind of think, you know, set this tone, you know, that I think Mark McCoy and all these people kind of fall into. I'm 90% sure Charles Bronson do a Necros cover, actually.
I don't know. Let me just see if we can pull it up.
They must. I know they do the Neos, obviously, but
they do the Neos, which is weirdly enough. Well, not weirdly enough. It's more obscure, arguably. But I'm trying to find on the actual records they tend to credit them. But on that,
CD, I think they do IQ32. I think on the.
Oh, LP. Sorry, you're right. That's on something, but that is also. Yeah, that's right. It's definitely showing on the CD version. So I don't know which one they do.
It's on the LP.
Okay. So they do. You're right. Yeah.
And so, like, you know, obviously you can see that influence is being worn fairly obviously on the sleeve with that. So, yeah, it's a great 1-2 punch. And also Barry lives in Chicago now, so it's a perfect 1-2 punch. As a follow-up, Barry, of course, staying in the Necros, also Big Chief. But for us on Turned Out of Punk, like, another super cool thing is that Motor Booty fanzine. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Chris, but what a killer zine.
I'm not, and I was disappointed that I wasn't, because what little he spoke of it in the interview piqued my interest greatly. And I think, like you, I think probably a future obsession is just going to be like trying to buy up all that kind of stuff, which thankfully I've not begun and I don't have space. but as I get more bored and more eccentric with age, I'm sure that will be where I'm headed. But yeah, I don't have. Do you have any of these?
I've got like about 6 issues.
Okay.
I would love to actually find out how many there were in total and see all their covers. But I'm like looking at some stuff online right now. But they were beautiful zines, like Mad Magazine. Like it looked like Mad Magazine. And it was fantastic. Kind of like some hilarious stuff in there. You know, it was National Lampoon meets the Mad Magazine.
So it says here there were 9 issues published between 87 and 99. So that's not a lot. That's great. That's attainable, which makes me very happy.
Yeah. There's like great interviews in every single one, and cool interview, like cool stuff about like movies. Like, fuck, they're writing about Guy Madden and like, you know, Pedro Bell, like the artist who did Funkadelic stuff.
Yeah, that's super. When he started talking about that, I was very impressed because I, for the time period too, it's weirdly enough, I had just recently watched, and I highly recommend. In general, I recommend the show, but there's a recent episode. The show is the Mike Judge Tales from the Tour Bus, which is excellent.
Yep, fantastic.
But the newest season, I don't know if you've seen any of the newest season, which is all, first season's all like outlaw country and that kind of stuff. Second season is all like funk soul and whatnot. And they actually do a P-Funk, like a George Clinton centric episode, which is incredible. But so I had recently watched that and I was just like, you know, just feeling it. So when I listened to this interview, it was kind of the perfect timing for it. But when he was talking about that from that zine, I thought, man, that's cool. Like for the era to be like really into that stuff, to like, you know, talk about it and whatnot. Yeah, I'm really impressed. I got to track these down because I think they'd be right up my alley.
Oh, 100%. When good bands start to suck, the art article is hilarious.
I liked everything. Like, just the way he quoted, I can't quote him, but the idea when he was talking about the people that did it came from hardcore or liked hardcore, but if you liked hardcore now, like, that wasn't cool. Like, I just thought that was hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what he means by that, like, completely. But I just thought it was a great, great position to take.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's funny. Like, in like the dude, they're referencing Void in like, you know, like talking about how great Void was. And like, you know, let's be honest, like it took hardcore a couple years before everyone caught up to how fucking amazing Void was. Like, obviously people knew, but like for it to become like, oh, Void's actually probably the best DC band.
Yeah, the other thing I want to solicit while we're on this, since we have listeners, is I have not seen these. So if you know of any source online that someone has taken the time that I'm too lazy to research at the minute, please feel free to write us and send links or what have you. I would very much appreciate it at turnedoutuponfootnotes@gmail.com. But anyway, sorry, continue there, Dave.
Yeah, no, there's it's good. Like, not everything in it ages 100% well.
No,
in
that's
the
fun.
Current day.
Yeah,
but you know, for zines of the time, like, I don't know for sure, because I don't know if Sarush mentioned them in that episode, but they definitely must have been an influence on Vice in some way.
Well, I would think like there's probably, you know, a handful that you could name that arguably are responsible for, if not Vice directly, but like the zeitgeist of whatever like Vice is or Spawned.
Yeah.
And I think like,
they have later issues too, now that I'm looking at it. I need some of these early ones.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's definitely very infamous, you know, whatever indie publications or zines, whatever you want to say, from the 90s that are all, although this started in the 80s. But anyway, yeah, I'm very curious to see it or see it read, issues, but I don't have any.
If you Google Motor Booty, the first thing that comes up is a, I guess, the Comics Journal feature about it.
Okay.
That's pretty fantastic and like a pretty exhaustive kind of look at, not exhaustive because there's definitely a lot more that could be done, obviously, but it's got a good overview of it.
Yeah, they do look really good too. I'm just seeing a couple of
gorgeous, yeah.
Covers. Yeah.
Yeah, like it was a zine that, you know, like they said, like it was a nerdy zine.
Yeah. I like that the tag is the better magazine.
Yeah.
I also feel like, and I don't know what year this started, but I believe it would have had to have been later. But there's a vibe of this that I feel like Chunklet definitely.
Oh, 100.
Homage from.
100%. I'm sure Henry would admit that.
Yeah, I'm not even saying that as like a, you know, a slight at all. I just mean like, I think that's cool. I think that's probably why, like, that's the kind of thing I like, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that like, you know, like you can see this influence of Mad Magazine in this, and like the fact that everyone influences everyone is amazing. Fuck, yeah. These things are expensive online.
I'm doomed.
Issue 6 is $80 Canadian.
Well, yeah.
On Amazon.
Times are tough.
Times are tough indeed.
So what?
To be a paper collector.
Off motor booty though, what any points you want to get to specifically or whatever offhand?
Oh shit, no, Chris, there actually there's a bunch of cheap ones on eBay right now.
Damien is lost.
I'm lost. Sorry. What points did I want to get to from this episode? I don't know, Chris. There's like so much to get into. I guess like the first thing that's kind of worth getting into is like I love the idea of the Necros as these young kids, you know, like at the format. I guess even before that, we get into that, that'll come up later. But like, is this the best, you know, pre-punk journey of any guest so far?
In what sense? I don't
like
know.
Like, he saw the Grateful Dead at the only acceptable period to like them when he's 4 years old.
Yeah.
You know, and then he sees Pink Floyd just after the only acceptable period to like them, but, like, still when it's kind of the hangover of that period, when he's fucking seven.
Yeah, I mean, those are pretty unreal. I'm not a fan, really, of either of those groups you mentioned, so I don't... I think it's an interesting tale, but... I don't know, I guess. I was more intrigued by his love for Alice Cooper, and I share his feelings on that. I wish I was I also disagree slightly. I mean, maybe because of someone who's older would have a greater perspective than I, but I, you know, Welcome to My Nightmare is not horrible at all.
So, yeah, but you heard when he gets off hardcore. Like, you know, I think it's like, you
Which
know,
is
but also,
too.
Dude, he saw the Grateful Dead at 4 years old, like on the period where they still had pig pens. They still had like the, as you said, the biker dude in the band. You know, and they were still doing like hard garage rock stuff too, I think he probably would have been jaded. Like it's like that music expert episode of the best show, but like in real life.
Yes, yeah, I do feel that two of your recent guests certainly are almost that, but real life. And of course, it was this one, and then. It's crazy. Like his journey's nuts. I think like some of that is something that you know it's just like privilege of age, I suppose.
But, I think it's also his parents too, right? Though like his dad,
of course. Yeah.
His dad like looking at the Sex Pistols review and being like, "We need to hear this as a family."
Yeah, that is wild. That is definitely like super cool because you would figure that most people would have not been feeling that at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although it's funny that consistently, because I can't remember who else, there has been other guests, even maybe it was mentioned again in the Thurston Moore one, some of the other ones were the guests of that age bracket, sort of talk about how much, because you read about it in books now, but I always feel like it's probably been a bit sensationalized for the sake of like the whatever the myth, but like that the Sex Pistols things was like them coming to America specifically was as big as it was.
Mm-hmm.
I always just figured that was like told a little taller when you read books that were sort of centric to the myth of keeping it, you know, huge, but it does seem to be that really did kind of, it hit squares on the news and stuff. Like it wasn't, like that was not embellished to the degree I expected that it was.
Oh yeah, like I don't think there's, you know, like maybe like I don't know the there's nothing really comparable that's happened since. But like the fear of punk, like you could see those morning shows. Like there's the footage of it in the Filth and the Fury, Julian Temple, amazing Sex Pistols documentary.
Great,
but those American morning shows where they're talking in fear about the Sex Pistols coming.
I just like, I for some reason in my head though, I still thought like even that, like, yeah, you feel like that was presented, but I just didn't, you know, you don't feel like the average family was hearing about this or something, but yet it seems to be from people of that era that, yeah, it in fact was that as the story would dictate. Anyway, it's neither here nor there, but yeah.
Yeah. Like I don't know. Like, and also the fact that he was going to these punk shows so young. Right, like he was there just as it's hidden.
Yeah,
Seeing everything.
There's also There, another part of this interview that I loved, because you two bonded over disliking Lemon Calling, which I think is like a very very turned out of punk talking point of all the tropes of the show. It's certainly Clash, Sex Pistols, Clash in general, and then you could like say like Fugazi, some other things. But I'm going to say the unpopular opinion. I think it's a good record. I don't think it's nearly as good as the others, like prior, but I like that record.
I think that record sold like a bajillion copies, so if anything, we're saying the unpopular opinion.
No, no, but I'm talking from the punk, like our world view, the punk-centric idea of it.
Yeah.
Which my opinion is less vogue in this sense, for sure. But I still think it's a good record in hindsight. Like, it's certainly not, you know, the earlier records, but I don't think it's a crap record. I really don't.
No, it's not a crap record. I definitely don't think it's a crap record. Like, you know, especially compared to, you know, any other band's catalog. I think the thing is, I just think those first records are promising something different.
For sure. For sure.
But also something that I think is fulfilled, you know, by other bands eventually.
Yeah, agreed. I just think like if you actually, from a nerdy standpoint, break down some of those songs on that record, like, yes, you still have some weird pop moments, which I do think as a record are good if you're looking outside of the view of a narrow view of punk-only standpoint. But I do think like some of the songs on that are massively overlooked. Like songs like Coca-Cola and like those kind of songs are just like, to me, not like lyrically next level, but like they're very punk in nature. But anyway, I digress. I just thought it was amusing that you two could bond over that. And I always love the kind of like that has that same kind of whatever, very specific opinion about something.
Yeah, well, I think, I don't know, I find it funny how many times these opinions do come up, and I find it also awesome that there are these, like, Beatles or the Rolling Stones type things in punk.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like, not that record. Like, you know, it's like not that Tusk is obviously more universally panned than London Calling, but the fact that this is almost like the Tusk of the Clash's catalog to punk purists.
Yes, of course.
I'm like, oh, I get off. I'm like, Rumours is great, but London Calling sucks.
But yeah, I think, anyway, I thought it was a good point. I'm trying to think of what other points I want to jump on here, because he had some really good stuff. I thought
the stuff about going to Cleveland for the Pagans and the drone stuff, I thought was so
sick. That was nuts. It's just like, it's almost unfair doing these when those kind of episodes come up, because, or like those kind of stories, because like I can't even imagine like that. I don't know.
But I kind of think it's cool that he would have seen it also after the Gold Rush. Like, you know, he's seen the Pagans. Like, obviously, the Pagans went on like well into the 80s and after. But at the same time, like, he's seeing them after they would have like been putting out all those killer singles.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's nuts. Even actually, speaking of stories, like that whole like seeing Minor Threat story with the Circle Jerks and that whole thing is nuts. Like, the fact that he's describing Minor Threat as being so good they blew away Circle Jerks, even though Circle Jerks had a fill-in drummer or someone he was mentioning. But like, just, it's insane. Like, it's just insane. I don't like. I thought. Oh, we can discuss this. This is, I thought, was a really good point, and I think it's kind of wild. And your reaction during the interview actually stated, I think, everything that needs to be said. But the fact that he thought Negative Approach were an underrated band still,
yeah,
is kind of insane. Like, because those records for me totally stand up.
But, oh, absolutely! Like, those records sound great. Like, the songs are all there. But man, that band must have been good live.
Well, yeah, exactly. And you could see, like, there's a lot of groups, I mean, that, of course, you and I maybe did not see. Well, did not see, especially in their original incarnations, let's say, or the original eras. But, you know, some of the records, like, we could parse, if we were really parsing, you know, splitting hairs or doing whatever, we could you could probably isolate certain records and go, you know, I wish, like, you know, some of the songs are outstanding, but I wish this record sounded a little different or whatever. But we would still not, you know, Negative Approach would not be on that list. You know, like, for me anyway, like, I wouldn't even have thought of that, like, in general.
Yeah.
So the fact that, that he thought that they were that much better than those records, I can't imagine.
Well, like, it's funny because, like, have you seen the footage of them playing Why Be Something That You're Not, right? You know that show that they did in Detroit? No, it's if they're playing a TV show.
Okay,
it's the coolest thing ever. Like, if you look it up, it's Negative Approach, Why Be Something That You're Not, Detroit 1982 is the name of the file. And it's a 24-minute set of them playing on that TV show. There's also, like, I think the Misfits did one. I think the Necros did one. Maybe did Black Flag do ones too? But they interview, like, the band on the couch at one point, and they're all super young, right? Like, John's got a shaved head. But the footage of when they're playing in it, I don't know, like, is this the first, like, hardcore band that, like, I don't know, like, where the guy's passing the mic to the people in the crowd? Like, the guy's, like, I don't know, this feels, like, different watching them play than any band that's kind of, like, up until that point.
I don't know. It would be hard to compare based on years. There would be a lot more people that are much deeper than me, certainly, that you could parse that with. Offhand, I don't know. But yeah, like, of the live footage I've seen, it's
next level. Like, oh, yeah, it's wild. Like,
but, yeah, I don't know. I've never thought of that. Like, it's almost like the idea where Negative Approach, one of the first hardcore bands of the people, if you will.
Are they the first American oi band?
That's a contentious topic you're going to bring up there, but yeah. I don't know. Do they predate Iron Cross or no?
I think the single comes out.
Ooh. I can't remember. People are screaming. If any of the actual crazy heads listen to this that you know, and I sort of know, they're screaming at the...
It's not just about them, Chris. It's ultimately just about me.
I know. I just mean, like, offhand, I don't know. I feel like that single probably came out before this, before the first Negative Approach 7-inch meeting. But and I'm sure there's probably some crazy, obscure, like, I don't know when, like, the cycle.
They're both 82.
Both 82?
Skin of Glory and the 7-inch. Yeah, they're both 82.
Same year, huh?
I mean, like, obviously I'm being, like, you know, a little ridiculous by saying they're the first oi band, because they're not, like, consciously an oi band, but, like, I think that almost makes them more of an oi band.
You say, no, you said American oi band, though.
American oi band, that's what I meant, but okay, I mean, like...
Yeah. I was like, yeah, because that, but, you're...
But, like, you know, and, like, you know, obviously Iron Cross is wearing it way more on their sleeve, but ultimately they're doing, like, an American interpretation of a British thing. Whereas, like, Negative Approach is doing something that's, like, 100%, like, American, but informed by a British thing.
I agree, and I think that's part of the greatness of the legacy of Negative Approach, 100%. And also that, referencing that Iron Cross, the things you just mentioned, that is actually clarified for us on the interview you did with Dante.
Yep.
Whatever, 2 years ago or so, live, and... So we're not, you know, you're not speaking out of school on that. But not that I think anyone would accuse you of. But yeah, I don't know. I know what you're getting at. I'm too tired to think of things where my brain is, like, being quick enough to cite anything else at the minute. And then also, you know, I don't know. I do think you're onto something, though. I think that is part of the appeal with Negative Approach.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think, like, it's because it's not quite that, but is that, and it's a distinctly American version of that, which I feel perhaps didn't exist, you know, before that, or, you know, however you want to frame any of this stuff. I think there are some of those, there are some groups to history that have always had that. I think, you know, arguably, you know, Agnostic Front is an obvious other one, but I think you could even, like, name like that know, like Cold as Life, original Cold as Life has a unique, they're not certainly the first, but they have a very unique origin.
Yeah, like it's like that's like American oi in the sense that it's like American working class rock and roll.
Yes, and it obviously is influenced by, but does not live to ape, you know, the stuff from out of country inherently, which I think it's kind of, I don't know. This is an interesting topic. I don't know. I'm no expert on it. I'm just saying that much, but I'm with you. I think you're onto something with the negative approach thing. It's something I've subconsciously felt for a long time myself, that there's a weird, distinctly American, almost like, particularly like the John Brennan of that era is just, you know, an enigma. That's why it's funny how he's described in that interview. Mm-hmm. Cause that's not how I perceived him.
Yeah, no, definitely not. Where do you want to go next?
Where to next? Let's see. Boy, oh boy. You guys talk about a lot of stuff that I just, like Starvation Army, I've never gotten into, so I can't wax about that.
Dude, he just tell me what you really think about about
footnotes should have just been Ohio. You and him talking again. It should have been you and him talking, dissecting his episode. That should have been the footnote. It's really funny again that this is the second episode in recent weeks that discusses the Soldier 7-inch.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's, like, again, distinctly of an era. Are him and Thurston the same age or around the same age?
I think it must be. Maybe Thurston's slightly older?
Yeah.
By a year or so?
There's some of the things that they discuss that are near. I guess we have to talk about them briefly, at least I feel like, the Ramones anecdote. I think, like, the I'm talking about like Johnny being like slightly bearded.
Yes.
Really fun to me for some reason.
I love that.
It is great. And I like the idea that Joe Jackson was humbled by the Ramones.
Yeah.
I would have never thought, I mean, it makes sense, but just like that, it was like this weird acknowledgement when he discusses the show. I just never. Weren't people that clearly came after them generationally that were influenced by them. I didn't expect that, you know, I don't know. I just wouldn't have expected Joe Jackson to be, you know, hold them in any regard. You know what I mean? I would have thought like Bills of that era, if they were chucked on a show like that, they would play and like either the audience would be adverse to it or like whoever they opened for would just be like, what's this? You know, just think it was just some kind of gimmick that wasn't their thing. So yeah, that was kind of neat to see, hear that anecdote.
Yeah, like I kind of, you know, I don't think I was that shocked that Joe Jackson liked them, because they would have been, you know, you listen to Joe Jackson, that guy kind of rips.
Yeah, but it's still, I don't know, perhaps it's my disassociation from the era that I don't see them in the same, you know, whatever respect and like. Like, maybe that's on me, but I don't know. It was nice to hear, but I'm always shocked because I consider like the Ramones like incredibly important in a band I love, but just very, very like an acquired taste despite their popularity. Mm-hmm. So any time that, you know, someone I feel is a bit outside of that circle acknowledges it, I'm always shocked. Nowadays, you see it all the time because, you know, their legacy is what it is, and like wearing that t-shirt doesn't even represent, you know, that anymore in a way. But I don't know, of that era, I'm just shocked to hear it. It would be like, you know, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a band as an example. Anyway, this is, I'm just ranting because it's late, but I don't know. Do you have another point here, my friend?
Well, yeah, no, I think that with them, they like, you know, you look at Bruce Springsteen like doing songs for him, right? Like,
yeah,
they definitely kind of cut, you know, like a deep kind of groove, I think, and a lot of people, I don't know, like, I think Joe Jackson probably would have felt like his success is kind of owed to their breaking through.
Yeah, actually,
years that's earlier, maybe.
Good,
I don't know.
That's a good point, too. No, that's a good point. I think that maybe that there's something to that, too.
I love the idea that this was, like, there was this time where, you know, they're going out hanging with Alec McKay and, like, then they're going to New York. And it's like, this is, like, where you're seeing, like, the formation of a scene.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that East Coast hardcore kind of, like, you know, connectivity that still exists today. Like, you know, and West Coast, obviously, as well. But, like, just, like, the Midwest to the East Coast, like, the fact that all these bands were hanging around with each other and going to each other's practices, I think that's super cool.
Yeah, I think his story about seeing SOA practice but never having seen them, like, technically live was an interesting story. I don't know how many times these days people like go to bands rehearsals. I certainly would have zero interest in that. But yeah, I guess it makes sense. I thought the fact that he liked Henry as the best, and this is no shade to anybody that ever fronted this group at all, but I was shocked based on his, you know, age or whatever, that Henry was his guy for Black Flag.
Yeah, no, I didn't, like, that was weird, because it's, like, normally you hear the opposite, right?
Yeah, well, and especially, like, he hedged it nicely, though, because he's, I guess, friends with all the people involved or whatever, but I just was, like, you normally hear, you know, of people of a certain, like pre-Henry, and how, like, you know, they hold one of the vocalists in high regard or higher regard. I agree. Like, it's weird though. Like, from, I guess, being younger, experiencing Black Flag, I see how the zeitgeist of Henry looms. And so for me, that's what, you know, I think of in my head. I don't know if I'd consider him my favorite, but it's hard to acknowledge that he perhaps isn't the best.
Yeah. Like, we had this discussion, like, unless you were like fucking Steve McDonald, or like, you know, someone that was there.
Yeah.
You know, like, Henry's your Black Flag singer.
Yeah.
You know, like, I definitely listen to the other singers more, but, like, you know, I can't claim, like, Henry's the guy that did the time with that band and, like, you know, by all accounts, like, embodied it. Like, dude, he beat up Fletcher from fucking Pennywise. Like, yeah, who else can say that?
Yeah. Yeah. True.
From what I hear, maybe an elephant. There's some story about an elephant, maybe, but, like, very few.
Yes. But I don't remember why we brought that up or why I brought it up. But, I was just surprised based on him being close to that he was adamant. I do think his point about the physicality brought by Rollins was very poignant.
Yeah, like, that's where it's like, you know, and obviously they all had presence of different types, right? Like, but, like, Henry is the one that, like, from the sound, like, that's the stories you hear, right? Like, it's Henry that's, like, attacking the crowd, and Henry that was, like, the beast on the stage. Like, you know, I love Keith. I fucking love Keith Morris to death, and I love the Circle Jerks to death, but, like... Yeah. I, you know, like, his presence on stage is definitely a completely different energy and doesn't have that menace.
Agreed.
That Henry would have brought.
Yep. Agreed. I don't think any of the other vocalists had, or since,
no.
Probably, have, like, since, depending on your consideration of whatever variation that group exists. But, yeah, like, I don't think anyone else. And you know, it's obviously that's why we know who these people are. You know, like, that's why. But
Like, Des has my favorite voice sonically, I think,
mm-hmm.
for those songs, you know, and Ron, I love Ron's voice on all those songs too. But, like, I've seen Des do them and it's amazing seeing him do them. But, like, he's not, like, prowling the stage like you're worried he's going to, like, you know, pull out some hidden weapon and kill someone.
It's true. Yeah, it's I mean, I remember first seeing any footage of him performing, and this was, like, I think the first Black Flag footage I ever saw was of, like, definitely, like, Slip It In era. It was some mm-hmm. kind of Toronto, I don't know where they played, but it was either on New Music or one of those.
I think it's on New Music where he's got kind of long hair and he's in the underwear by that point.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And that footage I just remember thinking, like, this was insane. And it certainly was, like, made an impression immediately. And I, you know, that was, again, that's not even prime. Well, arguably might be prime era, depending on your consideration of the band. But for me, it's not even prime era, and it's that strong. So I can only imagine, like, prior to that, you know, how that was going. But, yeah.
Is there anyone in the world, though, that's like, you know, Slip It In and After Only? Fuck the early years.
I've never met them, but I'm sure there's somebody. I actually can't wait if you ever encounter them, because I want to hear the argument.
I would love to hear the argument, too.
Like, I don't know. I like Slip It In.
It's got its place, but
yeah.
I don't like, you know, it's not like where I'm like, yo, not even into the early years.
Yeah, that's crazy talk. But I do like those records. I do think they're good. They're not damaged. They're not, you know, but I do like them. And I do think they're strong. I think if those records were in a lot of other bands' catalogs, I think they would not be considered, you know, strange or whatever.
Yeah, so long. Yeah, and someone who's now been in a band, you know, for a long time.
Yeah.
Fuck, like, God help you if you're trying to play the same shit the whole time.
Damon just came off tour, everybody. But yeah.
No, but like, I mean, like, I'm having so much fun playing the new songs, you know, and I know what it's... And maybe that's the first time for me, too, I gotta say, like, where I actually like playing the new songs more than I like playing the old songs.
Okay.
But, like, you know, I know being up there, like, yeah, people want to hear the other shoe, you know, but you're still forcing them to hear the new stuff.
Yeah. It is the prototypical bummer move for, like,
yep.
you guys mind if we play a new song? It's like, yeah, the audience consensus is like, no.
Yeah, yeah. It's weird. It's, you know, and then Barry kind of gets into this too, like the way they all like hated hardcore and they all checked out at a certain point.
Yes. So he didn't elaborate a great deal, but I'm curious as to, like, pick your king, like, why?
Well, I think he said that's the best record. Like, no one did anything original after that.
Yeah, sorry. Pardon me. I'm totally wrong. He did elaborate. Correct. I get what he's getting at. I'm not sure I wholeheartedly agree with it, though.
Yeah.
Not that my opinion is certainly not as valid as his, but I thought it was cool. Like, he talks about some contemporary groups in the interview, which I thought was cool too. And I thought that was important to hear, because I think, like, that tends to be, I think what disappoints me is when people check out totally and, like, never revisit it again and just assume that everything after it's crap. Not that I think anyone truly believes that deep down. I just think people get, you know, people grow up, get lazy or whatever. I'm the same. But I just think, like, because Pick Your King is 86, I want to say.
I guess 86, yeah.
So I'm just thinking, like, what crazy records came out after that? I mean, there's definitely crazy records that came out after that, but, like, in that
Feel the Darkness.
Well, yeah, that alone. The fact that, yeah, that's a very good point. Using the same artist and, like,
just
framing that. I don't know. I'm not.
But, like, I guess he's what he misses out on, and it seems to be a huge divide amongst those older kind of, like, people that were part of hardcore in the first generation is the youth crew stuff coming around.
Yeah, there's that. I think his point, I understand the point of the idea where the claim was that up until whatever the time of that record, I'm going to say like 86, I can't remember, everything seemed like sort of, like, dare I say, like, original, I guess is the way he would frame it. And then everything after that was like a, there was a formula to it. So therefore it wasn't as whatever you want to say, spontaneous, fresh, authentic, whatever you want to use for that, you know, to say it. But I'm trying to, like, I feel like it shifts a little bit, and arguably, like, there's a lot of purists that really don't like, especially the late 80s, certainly the early 90s. But I think through all that period, I think there's definitely always records that jump out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to just, like, think of, like, big ones that, like, clearly.
Well, but that's when it really begins. Like, to me, that's when, like, Youth Crew kind of begins on the East Coast and on the and on the West Coast a little bit too, obviously. But like then Power Violence begins also on the West Coast. Like you got the Infest stuff starting to happen.
Yeah.
And like,
I guess my argument is this though. I always think the generation of people that we're discussing, and again, this is me speaking on their behalf, which I have no right to do, but any of the older, you know, the elder statesmen that I've ever encountered or read their opinions, the Youth Crew thing, I never, like, I could immediately just cite Youth Crew records. But it seems to be, and you and I have experienced this, that the Youth Crew thing, it didn't go down the same for the people that had experienced the first wave almost, because no. They viewed it as a bit, what's it like caricature or something, like a bit too self-referential or something, or a bit disingenuous, however you want to kind of say that. Or just viewed it maybe because we were disassociated from going to some of those shows in those years. Maybe it was what was associated with it. I don't know, but, yeah, I don't, anyway.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like it was the next generation, right? Like it would make sense that like you had this whole new crop of kids. Like Thurston talked about it happening a couple times in New York in his episode.
Yeah.
And this would have been like that next sort of like major seismic shift in
that
class of, I don't know, 82, 83. Like them kind of checking out.
The other big one I would say because, so he said Pick Your King or he said Kings of Punk?
Did he say Pick Your King or Kings of Punk? Maybe he said Pick Your King.
I thought he said Pick Your King and that's 83. To me, that's kind of insane because there's definitely, that's early, early, early. And he may have chose that. But I in my head when he said it, if he didn't say Kings of Punk, I was associating the punk because it's 86. Pick Your King's 83. So 86, I'm just thinking, okay, say it's 86. That's the same year as Age of Quarrel. So does that get included? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but those guys hate that record. Not those guys. I shouldn't say him because I don't know.
Yeah,
I
haven't talked to that crop of people of that. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Yeah, perhaps, but I still think like that's a big record.
Well, that record's a monstrous record, but I think like that record to them would have been like, you know, like maybe viewed as being part of crossover, which would have been happening around that time, or like just not their scene. Like that record's, you know, that record's a fucking monster.
But I guess what I'm playing at here is that I feel like there are some people, not necessarily him per se, but there are people that kind of check out on like the sort of meat and potatoes American hardcore thing, or hardcore in general, I guess, but like particularly American hardcore, it seems. And then I feel that do the crossover thing a bit, yet seemingly kind of don't like crossover at the same time or something, right? Like, so it's weird. Like, I think there's this bizarre, anyway, I was just using Age of Quarrel because it was a good one to use because I totally agree with what you're saying, where there's a type of people that don't like that record on the basis of like it being too metal or something.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, to not acknowledge it at a minimum as like the perfect hybrid of like that first wave or something. Like the culmination of the first wave into one, you know, I don't know. Anyway, like the Bad Brains meets like Motorhead idea or whatever. Anyway, so it's interesting to me. I think 86 or 83, certainly 83 is like way early, way too early. I'm intrigued by this, but.
Well, like, I think you have to have like those ends of eras, you know, so you can at least have a new era start, right? Like if everyone's trying to like, hold on to the era that came right before it.
Yeah.
You know, nothing new's going to get going.
Yes. I also full acknowledge though that the people that hold these opinions know far more than I. So I could be dead wrong, but I do think even acknowledging some of the contemporary bands kind of illustrates sort of the idea that in any era, I'm just a big proponent that it's never dead. Like, there's always going to be great groups of all eras.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, you know, this show has the perfect taste because we like it all. Except for the stuff we don't.
Sure,
which yes. Sucks.
Sure, yes.
You know, on an objectionable kind of level.
I'm, I agree with you. I'm trying to think. I wanted to like you to pontificate slightly about some of the nerdy things. So one, I don't know why Sex Drive's only 100 records.
Yeah.
See, I didn't know that. I thought that was that I learned. I knew it was limited. I didn't know it was that limited.
Yeah. So now that we say it out loud, and then what's the fix? The fix is like 200 maybe?
I thought it was, yeah, two or three, I thought.
No, I think it's less than three.
Really?
Yeah, maybe 250.
Yeah. So I wasn't aware. I had just assumed those were like, I don't know, 500,000 press records. So now I kind of get why they're so expensive, or have always been arguably so expensive.
Yeah. You can buy a sleeve right now for $500 on US on eBay. This or on Discogs.
Fix or Sex Drive?
For Sex Drive. Wow. Just a sleeve.
Yeah, like I remember when the bootleg was very prominent, which they never did any of the original pressings with, or I guess there's only 100, it's probably not. The original is all red, right? So the bootleg is the yellow one?
The bootleg, but I think there's also a white version, too, of the original.
Yeah, I remember the yellow one was floating around like 15 years ago, and that was easy to get, like the bootleg, obviously. But no, I don't think I've even ever seen that record in person, actually, now that I think about it.
I saw Barry's.
Yeah, you may. I've never, but I just mean even on like a crazy heat wall at like some store randomly. I've never seen that ever. Actually, so well, obviously the fix, same. But even at, yeah, I've never seen that. Yeah, even at, yeah, some of like, I don't know. Do you know anyone that has it? You must.
Yeah, I know some people that have it. It's not really a record that would sit around, right? Like anyone that is, people like normally just go and buy it every time it shows up.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah.
But it's wild that it's like $3,000 or $6,000 now, probably.
Oh.
More.
Jeez. Yeah.
Certainly a record that's worth holding on to if you have a copy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or give it to me, whatever you want to do.
I want to clarify something really quick here, because in your show synopsis, you have Kings of Punk as the last great hardcore record. So to clarify that.
Oh, but you must have said Kings of Punk then.
Yeah, so that is 86 for the nerds that are paying attention.
Yes. So there we go. Not as bad as we thought.
Kind of suits the narrative, as in like the American hardcore book narrative of like Dead by 86 idea.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's when a lot of those dudes checked out.
Yeah.
But they're a loss.
Good. I agree. I don't think they have, though. Again, he acknowledged some contemporary stuff, which leads me to believe that, you know, he is definitely not completely out of the loop.
No. No, definitely not. Yeah, like a really awesome guest. I'm really stoked that I got to sit down and talk to Barry.
Yeah, agreed.
Do you have any more points you want to get to?
I'm good, unless you want to jump on anything.
No, I think I'm good now, too. Let's leave it here for today. Yeah. Because, Chris, we're going to be coming back with a big one next week.
Absolutely.
A big one indeed. Next week on the show, we are going to be doing a special year-end wrap up here at Turned Into Punk. We're going to have a lost episode drop in. I think I'm going to do it on Christmas Day. Even though that's like super cliched, I think I'm going to do it on Christmas Day for that episode.
No, I think that's great.
Yeah, but then you and me are also going to be doing two special shows that will be coming on the next 2 weeks. First, Chris, next week we are going to be having, what is it?
You're talking the mailbag episode?
Yeah, the mailbag episode. Okay. Sorry, I should have set you up a little bit better than just throwing it to you.
I was like, unless there's one I'm not familiar with. But yes, the mailbag with the Dave.
Yeah, we're going to be doing a mailbag episode with the two Daves. They'll be joining us. We'll be getting into some heavy shit.
Yeah, it's much much needed. So also for anybody, actually, this will probably go up later, so never mind. I was going to say send in questions, but by the time you send them in, well, send them in if you want, but by the time you send them in, it will probably have already been recorded.
Yeah, please send them in, and we can talk, and we can chat, and we can go over them. Yeah. Mailbag. How do they get the mail to us, Chris?
Yeah, you can reach us here at turnedoutapunkfootnotes@gmail.com.
And so we're going to be tearing this thing wide open on the show. But that's it, Chris. Anything else you want to get to?
No, I'm good.
All right, everyone, thank you for listening. We will be back next week with that special. And go there, sign your organ donor cards, and we will see you next week.